Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Today, we're going to continue our Pride Month focus, showcasing a unique environmental collaboration between Wilton Pride and the Norwalk River Valley Trail and the upcoming Push and Pull Pride Month celebration. Tune in and find out how to be part of this first-of-its-kind Pride Month activity at one of Fairfield County's newest recreational sites. Then we'll invite you to one of Connecticut's premier activities, the Global Cultural and Community Celebration that is the International Festival of Arts and Ideas, opening this weekend, continuing through June 25th in and around Greater New Haven, with dozens of ticketed but mostly free concerts, exhibits, talks, and way too much to even pack into this segment. And since June is also Pollinator Month, we're going to welcome back our friends from the National Wildlife Federation to talk about the critical importance of sustaining and growing our regional population of pollinators by utilizing a host of native plants that are easy to get, plant, and grow right in your own backyard. Stay with us and find out all about it. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. It's also Men's Health Month here in June, and the Center for Cancer Care at Griffin Hospital on Seymour Avenue in Derby and the Health Initiative for Men, HIM, are hosting free prostate cancer screenings from 3 to 5 p.m. on Thursday, June 15th. That's this Thursday. HIM encourages men to have an annual physical and to raise awareness about men's health issues like prostate cancer and colorectal cancer. These screenings will take just 10 to 15 minutes, but space for these free screenings is limited. So register now by calling 203-732-1260 or just visit griffinfacultyphysicians.org. Well, as we mentioned in the intro, we're continuing with our Pride Month focus and this really interesting and unique partnership and collaboration between Wilton Pride and the Norwalk River Valley Trail. We're pleased to have on the line with us Farah Masani of Wilton Pride and Andrea Gartner of the Norwalk River Valley Trail. And today, as we're taping this on June 8th, we're also celebrating a bit of a milestone for a brand new nonprofit, Wilton Pride. Farah, 6 months to the day that you flipped the switch and made Wilton Pride happen.
Indeed, we are very excited to be celebrating our six-month anniversary of being an official nonprofit. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. What brought you to want to establish Wilton's own Pride organization?
Absolutely. We've been having a groundswell movement of Pride initiatives for the past few years in Wilton. That's just been initiated by Girl Scouts, by local parents wanting to have visibility for our queer community. But Pride initiatives go beyond Pride Month. Our queer community live among us, with us, in Wilton and beyond every single day of their lives. And every single day we need to make sure we create a safe space where our queer community is feeling welcome, supported, and celebrated. So to that end, we formed this nonprofit to provide meaningful, supportive services year-round for our children and families for Wilton and beyond. And we decided to take this and make it official, become a nonprofit, and start these targeted programming for our residents.
So much like new grassroots organizations, you guys don't even have a website yet. You basically are living on Instagram. So if folks are interested in getting to know more about Wilton Pride or taking part or supporting them, you can just go to @WiltonCTPride on Instagram to get more familiar with them and the things that they're doing. So Andrea, welcome. I'm not sure if it was you you or another member of your organization that we had on the last time with Norwalk River Valley Trail, but we're always happy to have back and be able to also put a spotlight on one of the premier environmental organizations and locations in Fairfield County. Let's hear a little bit more about NRVT.
Sure thing. And thank you so much for inviting me to talk about a project that is, really a big idea as far as big ideas go. And, really will be a legacy to, residents and visitors in Fairfield County and presently and in, the future. So previously you did hear from our interim board president, Kate Throckmorton.
Right.
And in general, the Norwalk River Valley Trail is a planned trail. It'll be the longest in Fairfield County, 30 miles of trail connecting from Cass Pasture Beach in Norwalk, Connecticut, all the way to Rogers Park in Danbury, while passing through Wilton, Ridgefield, and Reading along the way. What's really exciting about the NRVT is that it'll give the chance to everybody. It's really universally accessible to hike, to bike, to run, walk, stroll with a baby, or, walk with a furry friend along the Norwalk River. And we have some really beautiful sections along the trail. They go by ponds and up, our lovely Connecticut hills. We recognize that good mental health and physical health come from spending time in Mother Nature. And we all don't want to get in our cars to go somewhere. So our planned trail is also considered an alternative mode of transportation. And when it's completed, you'll be able to get from Danbury to Norwalk without a car.
Wow. And how are some of the ways that community members are coming together to support the organization and this linkage that you're hoping to make from Norwalk all the way up to Danbury?
Well, the organization has been primarily powered by volunteers since its inception in 2012. I was hired as the first full-time executive director a year and a half ago at the beginning of 2022. And it's just really amazing how many people in the community really do support the trail. And I think, if we want to talk about the positive outcomes of maybe what we've all learned during the pandemic and COVID-19, is that our accessibility to outdoor, recreational trails and getting outside and being safe is really has moved from, I think, a nice to have in a community to a must have.
Mm-hmm.
And so we find that we do get a lot of individual support for our trail. While we work to partner with our municipalities along the trail to acquire a lot of state and federal funding, it doesn't mean that, with all the money that we do get for trails, that we're not without need of donations, because the NRVT does handle all the pre-construction costs of mm-hmm. what it takes to get the trails to construction.
And what is your website?
NRVT-trail.com.
So for folks that are interested in learning more, they can either check out the prior podcast where we featured this group talking at length about the project, or just to get to know more about them, maybe walk the parts of the trail that are already in place, or to potentially come out to this fantastic collaborative event, the Push and Pull Parade. Who discovered who first? Farah, was it you who thought about involving the Norwalk River Valley Trail? Or Andrea, did you hear about Wilton Pride? How did that all come together?
I'm going to let Farah speak to this, because I really have to give her props for reaching out. Although I will say I'm kind of stunned to learn today it's only their 6-month anniversary, because I work from home, but I'm rooted in Danbury. So a lot of times I find co-working spaces along the trail at coffee shops in each of the communities. And especially in Wilton, I just thought Wilton Pride had been embedded in the community for years and years and years with everything that I had been seeing.
Farah, how about that?
Hats off to you, Farah.
Thank you for that. It has been a long road to get to this point. I live in Wilton and absolutely love the Norwalk River Valley Trail. I use it for myself, with my dogs, my kids. We go biking. Being outside is a huge part of my life. And this trail is such a benefit to Wilton. And every time I walk on the trail, I imagine what fun would it be if we had an event on the trail. And I envision this pride parade with drums and music and colors and people dressed up to express themselves and bringing their dogs and strollers and wheelchairs and scooters and parading down the NRVT, celebrating this beautiful luxury that we have in Wilton of a trail, but also being able to be ourselves and celebrating our queerness and celebrating our LGBTQ plus families and strengthening our bonds as a community and all coming together to celebrate these two amazing institutions in Wilton. So that was the vision and that was the idea. And I reached out just explaining myself, thinking that somebody is going to think I'm crazy and this is not feasible. But there she was saying, you know what? Yeah, let's do this. Let's make it happen. And a couple of phone calls and a couple of email exchanges. And we had this amazing event put together and go out to press. And we just can't wait to see everyone on Sunday, June 25th from 1 to 4, having a parade and a party on the NRVT.
So Wilton Pride has put out, and you're right, Andrea, it does sound like they've been there forever. Farah is running Wilton Pride like a finely tuned machine already. They've put up this BU series of events that kicked off with the big Wilton Pride Festival yesterday as we broadcast this on Sunday morning, and it's going to be continuing through the month. So once again, if you want to get to know Wilton Pride, they're at Wilton CT Pride on Instagram to start. No website yet, but you can get to know this organization better by coming out to the Push and Pull Parade. It's Sunday, June 25th, 1 to 4 at the Norwalk River Valley Trail in Wilton, and it's going to have some really exciting and fun things happening. So we hope everybody that's listening will be able to come out and do that on the weekend of June 25th. Now, where would folks go to get into the starting area or the staging area for this in Wilton? Andrea?
Yeah, sure. So for those who aren't familiar with our trail or would like to check out the trail and may not know where the best place to access it is, we always direct people to the commuter lot that's located at Wolf Pit and Route 7. It's the intersection of Route 106 and Route 7, just a little right near Orin's Diner. Mm-hmm. And our trailhead is across the street. So we're directing people to park there and walk across the street where Farah and I will be set up with registration tables. Excellent. And have people check in.
Very good. Come dressed to impress and win. Best embodiment of pride, best use of color, best creative use of flair are the categories for the winners of the best dressed contest for Wilton Pride. And once again, to get to know this organization, you can visit them online at Instagram at Wilton CT Pride. And if you'd like to know more about or support the Norwalk River Valley Trail, Andrea, you said it's NRVT-trail.com. Very good. Our guests this morning here in this next in our Pride Month focus have been Farah Masani, today celebrating the 6-month founding of the 501c3 nonprofit Wilton Pride Organization, and Andrea Gartner, who's the executive director of the Norwalk River Valley Trail. Folks, have a great event on June 25th, and thank you so much. And thank you so much. Well, right around this time every year, we like to take the opportunity to promote really something that puts Connecticut on the global map in terms of arts and culture and conversation and community building. I'm talking about the International Festival of Arts and Ideas. It's kicking off this weekend and creating this place in Greater New Haven with world-class artists, thinkers, and leaders, attracting and engaging a broad and diverse audience, celebrating and building community and advancing economic development. Many of the things that we've talked about over these many years since the festival formed, and with a number of people and leaders of the team that brings this global festival to Greater New Haven, I'm pleased to meet a brand new one. Malachi Eason is with us. He's Director of Programming and Community Impact for Arts and Ideas. Malachi, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
So tell me a little bit about how the Director of Programming and Community Impact serves as one key cog in the wheel that makes the festival happen.
Okay, thanks for asking. So the position is, it's multifaceted, if I will. Mm-hmm. So the programming part is the part where I'm able to like travel and go around the globe and see so many fantastic, talented people in different countries and different parts of the U.S. and really scout for the talent that I think will definitely resonate here in our great state of Connecticut. Connecticut is like a melting pot of different backgrounds, cultures, people from all over the world. So I'm able to tap into that and go explore and find people who are able to do different types of arts and bring them back into our country and back into Connecticut. And so in the programming, we're able to take that and put it in the different parts of the things that we present, whether it's through ideas, whether it's through tours, put it on our big stage or a ticketed show. So I'm able to do that within my team and lead my team in figuring out ways of being creative and sticking within a theme. And then in the community part, I'm able to take whatever theme that we have and use that to reach the community. And that's going with our Big Read that we have and our partnership with the Big Read. And then taking the community part and giving our community the opportunity to have access to what we do here in our festival. So we do all kinds of partnerships throughout our community to give them a part of our expansion that we do throughout the summer. But we do that throughout the year.
So the festival extends through June 25th in locations all around Greater New Haven. And even in these challenging times, Malachi, you have not only worked to bring a wealth of talent and genius into New Haven to benefit anyone who may come out for one or many of the activities under the Arts and Ideas umbrella, but you also fight to try to keep a lot of the programming at low or no cost.
Mm. Yes, we do. You know, actually, we have about 85% of our programming is free. And that is something that is not often heard of when it comes to programs of our magnitude. We have 85% of it is free, and the other percent of it is absolutely ticketed. But even our tickets range no higher than like $75, and it's honestly cheaper than that. So we do a really good job of making sure that everybody has access, that it's definitely inclusive of everybody. And honestly, if you come to us and you're and it's a group of people, we always have group discounts. We always find ways of making sure that our community has access to everything that we do, because we're not here to try to put a stamp and make money. We're here to make sure that everybody has access to art in our community.
And certainly providing a wealth of free programming every year over the course of the festival is a fantastic way to engage, because even a modest ticket price for a couple or a family or a group who might want to attend could be the difference between going and not going. But certainly it also bears discussing briefly how the fact that you're able to utilizing so many free and premium paid programs bring people into Connecticut folks who may be listening to this program in one of the other far corners of the state may say, well, what does the Arts and Ideas Festival have to do with me? But certainly this is an economic development driver that doesn't just benefit the greater New Haven area. There are economic benefits throughout the state of Connecticut that span up into the millions, right?
Oh, absolutely. The good thing about Arts and Ideas, and I think you kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, is that, you know, sometimes we get looked at as a New Haven-based festival, right? But, you know, maybe at one point we were. But I think within the last 3 years, we have really done our due diligence in making sure that we are accessible to out Connecticut, and also we've been recognized outside of Connecticut. We've done partnerships in Hartford, partnerships in Wilmington. We have been in Bridgeport. We've been throughout Connecticut, making sure that we have done shows and talks and ideas conversations all throughout Connecticut, and programming with companies and organizations throughout Connecticut to make sure that our word and our mission has been spread throughout the state. Whether it has been ticketed, whether it has been plays, we do all kinds of things to make sure that everybody's being touched by the art through our organization. So absolutely.
You also do a great job sprinkling some Connecticut talent in through Ooh. Those who are coming from points all over the globe.
Oh, yeah. That's one of my favorite things. Like, you made me smile when you said that. That's good that you see that, and hopefully the community sees that. I think it's crazy to present all these wonderful talents from all over the world and then not recognize the fact that you have all this wonderful talent right here in your backyard. When I first moved to New Haven, and I moved here from Omaha, Nebraska, and one thing that I realized when I was there, I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know there's so much good talent here. Oh my goodness, who knew it was here in Omaha? And so I knew when I got to New Haven, I said, I'm looking for who's the who here in the town. And I just got out. I went to certain like open mics. I went to certain like rock clubs. I went to Jazzy's, and I just found all these local artists, and I was blown away by the amount of talent that was here. And so I just had to get them on stage. So absolutely, whenever I run into an artist that I'm blown away by, I find a way of getting them on our stage or finding a way to program them in some way, shape, or form, whether it's at our galas, whether it's at our, you know, award shows or opening acts or main acts. We have plenty of main acts on our season that we do our locally acts. Like this year, we have one of our local acts who I didn't even know she was from Connecticut, Stout, who's like a worldwide known artist. She lives right here in New Haven. She travels singing with like all the greats, from Stevie Wonder, Alicia Keys. She sang with everybody. Missy Elliott toured all over the world. She lives in New Haven. She's headlining one of our nights. That's crazy to me. But that's what I'm saying. We had Dawn Tomlin last year, who's the queen of like house, toured all over the world and known all over the world. Lives in New Haven.
Yep.
Crazy, right?
Yeah.
I didn't even know this stuff.
And it's not even the ones on stage. You have a wealth of talent homegrown here in Connecticut who are doing hundreds of different behind the scenes jobs as well. And young people that may be getting introduced to a world that will spawn a career in the arts for them.
Yes. And you're referring to our Fellows Program. So our Fellows Program, I think, is super original for the state of Connecticut. And it's beneficial to our youth. So you work in entertainment, and you know how hard it is to find people who actually work on this side of the industry. And this side of the industry is not really publicized as much as it really should be. And so we find youth who are interested in actually learning the business side of entertainment. So they learn things from programming, from finances, from, you know, running of shows, and from production, from development, all those wonderful things that it takes to actually run a show to make the thing happen. They learn all those things, and they're able to get their feet wet when it comes to the festival and shadow the people who are doing the work. And they get like all kinds of access to shows during the program, during the school year. And I'm able to, I was able to see it when I first got here, the first 2 years I was here. And then also being a father myself, my son was able to take part in the fellows this year. And so I'm also able to now see like the inner workings. So I'm able to, you know, I oversee the program, of course, with my staff. But my son's coming home talking about how much fun he's having. And, oh, my gosh, I think I might actually want to work in production because I like to see the behind the scenes. And I want to, I like the lighting part of it all. And it's just exciting to see how excited they get from being exposed to the behind the scenes of the world of entertainment.
Oh, that's
so absolutely
great to hear the personal connection there. Malachi Eason is with us. He's the director of programming and community impact for the International Festival of Arts and Ideas in Greater New Haven, but benefiting the entire state of Connecticut and Northeastern region. It's on and beginning this weekend, and you can learn more about it going to artidea.org. We're going to take a quick break and come back and talk about some of the highlights of the next couple of weeks at the festival with Malachi. Stay with us. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Hey, have you heard about CT Folk's new community partner? Well, CT Folk is thrilled to present two Folk on the Edge concerts on Thursday, June 15th and Saturday, July 29th, both from 5 to 10 p.m. in partnership with New Haven's Bears Smokehouse. The concert series, which will host an eclectic lineup on both dates, will also feature local artisans. On Thursday, June 15th, check out music from Amber Anchor, the Moonshells, and the Gaslight Tinkers. Folk on the Edge concerts have a suggested donation of $20 and benefit CT Folk's mission to engage, entertain, and inspire a diverse audience through music and conversation, and to help create a socially responsible and environmentally sustainable community. Want more information? Just go to ctfolk.org. We are back with Malachi Eason. He is the Director of Programming and Community Impact. He comes to Greater New Haven from Omaha, and we're thrilled to have him here. The International Festival of Arts and Ideas is on. It started this weekend and extends through June 25th. So, Malachi, before we talk about a few of the key tentpole events of the rest of the festival, the challenge is not just trying to accommodate people and their familiarity with some of the things they like to see every year, but also keeping it fresh and introducing new things to the festival. Can you give us an idea of two or three of the big new things that are happening this year that may be of interest to folks?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So you said it right on the like the dot. So something that I think, as a festival as a whole, we always want to make sure that we, one, stand out amongst the rest of the festivals, and that we give our community something to look forward to that's different. And so something that we've been doing lately was making sure that we create something that is new. So, for example, last year we did fashion show. The year before that we did a hair show. And so this year we're doing something that's called, we also do a drag show. So that's new to the festival. So we've been ending our festival with a drag show every year, so that's happening again this year. But this year we're doing something called The Divine Homecoming, and that is like a stage play that incorporates music, poetry, dance, stepping, and it focuses on the historically Black colleges, the HBCU, as well as the Divine Nine, which is historically Black fraternities and sororities. And so it has been produced in-house within the festival through the staff of the festival. And it's going to be so beautiful, happening on June 17th on the stage outdoors. So that's something new happening in the festival. And so we try to bring new things like that to give our community history as well as new art. And everybody in the cast and as well as the people who are singing and dancing and doing poetry are all from Connecticut. And so it's something that has been produced here and will be living in history from Connecticut. And we're partnering with artists from Canada who's coming down to blow out the ending of that entire show. So that's going to be super cool.
That sounds like fun. We know, having had you guys and your predecessors on For the People, going back all the way to 1996 when this whole thing started, that the planning for next year's festival starts the day after this year's festival. And even though planning for 2023 started in late June of 2022, you guys are so forward thinking. You always seem to drill into what's coming in terms of social issues, and then suddenly, boing, they appear in your programs. What are a couple of the big social issues that we're looking at today that the new this International Festival of Arts and Ideas is going to have out there front and center for education and discussion?
Well, this year we wanted to make sure that we just kept it to things that are happening right now. And if you haven't seen what's dropping with Apple, they have all kind of artificial things happening. Very high tech. Oof. It's good, but it's also kind of scary because I really feel like we're living in the Jetsons world. And things are really happening.
Or the Terminator world.
Oh my goodness.
Pick your poison.
Because now you got that in my head, and I'm sorry. Kind of scared now.
All right.
Thanks. Sorry. Thank you so much, my friend.
Okay. Sorry about that.
But so we have one of the topics that we're talking about in the ideas is the art of artificial intelligence, right? And so we have that one being moderated by Rena Diaz, and it's a talk with Brianna Buck and Ira Rebels. And then we have the future of automobiles, which is also talking about more technology, right? And then we have the conversation about talking about water and where that's leading and the health of that. And then we have some conversations talking about democracy and the struggle for the rights to vote. And then we also have some, like, our keynote things, which is happening with Baratunde Thurston, who is also, like, talking about tech and democracy, who he's super awesome. And then we talk about social equity. And so we have a lot of topics that are so relevant that are going to kick people's shoes off. And these are things that you absolutely just do not want to miss, because these are conversations that are going to really, really hit home. And if you want to talk about our community, the things that we're struggling with here in Connecticut, you know, we talk about understanding housing and security. You know, we talk about housing and the resources. You know, we talk about driving connections, you know. And so all of these things that we tackle because these are the things that are one hit in our community as globally, and then also what's hitting our state directly.
I want to spend the last couple minutes with you, Malachi, talking about one of the cool free shows that you have coming up, and what you think is probably going to be one of the most well-received ticketed shows. You talked about New Haven artists, so I really can't let you go without giving a shout out to Molly Venter and her best guy, who are going to be doing the Goodnight Moonshine show on June 15th.
Ooh.
New Haven,
what you know about
New
them?
Haven Molly.
Okay. Yes. So first of all, everything, I absolutely love them. They are my fave. So yes, I'm excited. I don't know what to say about them. First of all, their blend is everything. Super talented. I think that's one of those groups that I just heard randomly. A friend of mine was playing like a video on YouTube of them singing, and I was like, who the heck is that?
Right. When you think of the great, like, when you think of the great couples who have been performers over the years, they are the 21st century kind of, you know, James Taylor, Carly Simon, you know, Sonny and Cher, but they're truly, you know, truly genuine, truly Americana, and truly instrumentally and vocally talented, and they put it all together and make a great show. Now,
let me tell you something else. They are not just talented, they're extremely kind, sweet, and easy to work with. And you know, when you find an artist who are super kind and sweet, you hold on to them and you want to work with them more and more and more. So I'm hoping that Connecticut gets to see more of them, not just Connecticut, but the world. And that's what my goal is, to continue to see more opportunities for them. Right. And they're on a day that's a day of dance with great people. So they have the Dance Exchange and Gabba 360. So I think they're on a great day just to show their talent.
Fabulous. And finally, before we let you go, we got to remind everybody there are dozens and dozens and dozens of programs. Artidea.org is the place you go to check out what's happening, even as early as today, right on the streets of New Haven and in the venues across the city and for the next couple of weeks. Artidea.org for all your free and ticketed shows. And we'll wrap it up with Malachi talking about their most interesting, perhaps, ticketed program. Every year, the festival really kind of revolves around a unique ticketed show. In your opinion, Malachi, what's that show going to be this year?
Oh my goodness, how could you do that to me?
Well, we're not saying it's the best one. We're just saying it's the most interesting, or perhaps among the most interesting.
Among the most interesting. I'm going to just put it out there. I'm just going to say, this is so mean, Zeynep Johnson, she's great. She's a stand-up comedian. She's done the HBO Def Comedy Jam. She's been on NBC Late Night Seth Meyers. She's super funny. She has an opening act, which is Kareem Green, who's from Connecticut. That's always a connection, right? And I just don't think anybody should miss out on this opportunity to see her. It's going to be super, super good. And she's on June the 22nd, and she's at the University Theater right here downtown New Haven. And she's great. She's really, really good.
Not Malachi's all-time favorite ticketed show. We have to definitely make sure everybody knows that. He loves all the performers because he plays a role in booking almost every single one. I am putting him on the spot, asking him to try to pick one, but time is burning here, and we've had a very, very rich and full conversation about this year's International Festival of Arts and Ideas. It started this weekend. It's happening in just a few hours and going on through June 25th. We hope everybody listening will take a day or several days to spend in the greater New Haven area and check out all the free and ticketed programs that are part of the 2023 festival. Go to artidea.org for everything you need to know, where to park, the tickets, the partnerships, the supporters, the sponsors. It's all happening there, in great part to our guest this morning, Malachi Eason, Director of Programming and Community Impact for the festival. Malachi, best of luck for the rest of the show and the vacation to follow, my friend, and we will see you in New Haven. Thanks so much. Well, even if we only talk to somebody once a year, it's always a good chat. And I'm so pleased to have Mary Phillips back on the program, especially here sort of in the early part of the summer when you're getting your hands in the dirt and making some sense of your gardens and landscaping. But also at this point in the year where it's so important to focus on planting and enhancing and developing native plants along with providing opportunities for hopefully our growing population of pollinators here in Connecticut. We talk about pollinators a lot on the program, Mary, with a diverse number of organizations and representatives that we have. From your perspective as head of the Garden for Wildlife and Certified Wildlife Habitat Program at the National Wildlife Federation, how are we doing with the pollinator population? We heard about the nicotinoid situation now probably a little over a decade ago that really devastated the global bee population, and that there was some retention and some improvement in the situation. But then another year or two ago, I heard about another kind of fallback. Am I on track with that?
Yeah, unfortunately, yes, there has been some declines, and particularly to our native bee populations. And thank you so much for having me on to talk about this important issue. Across the U.S., there's about 4,000 native bee species, and a significant number of those have experienced decline due to habitat loss. And one of the reasons that they experience such decline is many of these, about, depending on the region you're in, 30 to 60% of these native bees that have co-evolved with plants for centuries are not finding those plants. And they are called pollen specialist bees, and they rely on specific plants to get their pollen and nectar to feed their young. And that's particularly the pollen to feed the larva to succeed. They can only rely on certain plants. And many of those plants are obviously native plants that have been wiped out by habitat pesticide use and development. Habitat development loss overall. So unfortunately, we are doing better. And one of the things we saw the last several years, we actually were part of a nationwide effort called the Million Pollinator Garden Challenge. It was started in 2015 and was really awesome because we got to over a million pollinator gardens by 2018. And Connecticut folks played a big role in that, which was awesome. But we were seeing pollinator hotspots. So those areas where we were able to connect or reconnect fragmented habitat with lots and lots of pollinator habitat spaces, pollinator gardens across any size space in these developed, highly developed areas. Studies are showing that those populations of bees can come back and be on the rebound.
We also hear from a lot of folks about the dangers of both invasive plants and animal species and insects. If we could kind of rearrange the talking points a little bit, I would like to get into some conversation with you and tap your expertise about native plants. Are there plants that folks can obtain here in Connecticut that they can plant on their properties or at their businesses not only enhance the pollinators and help to boost the native plant population, but are there any native plants that can actually outgrow or muscle out invasives?
Oh, interesting question. I mean, there are some that are assertive spreaders that can start competing with some of the invasives. The challenge with the invasive plants, though, they are usually not natives, and they've come from other countries, and they don't have natural predators usually, that are keeping them back. And their growth is so aggressive that they and I think of one called lesser celandine, which is just become a nightmare in natural and even residential spaces. It just grows so rapidly, and it has a root system, a bulb-like system that of tubers that they spread underground. And when you try to dig them out, they actually it sometimes makes it worse. So there are some that, but the thing is to really pull out as much as possible on your property. Any of these kind of invasive type plants and replace them. So the more densely you plant native plants, that does not allow for these other types of aggressive plants to come in. That really usually helps. I mean, you do have to do some maintenance if you have an issue like lesser celandine, which is quite aggressive. But for the most part, if you plant densely native plant collections, that's going to help you keep out these invasive species and then provide the correct nectar and host plant capability for the wildlife where you live.
So what are a few of the most effective native plants that people can go out and obtain and add to their landscape or spread throughout their yards and landscape?
Sure. So I mentioned earlier the host plant role of plants that support both butterflies and moths and also pollen specialist bees. And these are plants that support really keystone native plants that support really high numbers of wildlife, particularly the butterflies, moths, and bees. And those are from the goldenrod, aster family, and sunflower family. Those are flowering perennials that support some of the highest numbers of these different species that we really need to bring back and protect. So those would be three really good options. The other is Planting all sorts of plants that support hummingbirds, which are another important pollinator, a bird pollinator that everyone really loves. And this in June is a really great time of year to have hummingbird attractant plants, as well as those that are fragrant flowering plants. So, you know, various bee balms, for example, those also deter the pests that like to eat native plants, because their fragrant scents kind of keep them away.
So why are we identifying June as National Pollinator Month? Is there a particular concentration of pollinators that are coming to the United States in June?
So a lot of them are already here, but they're very active in June for a couple of reasons. And National Pollinator Month is an annual celebration. National Wildlife Federation has been honoring each June since 2015. But that also includes Pollinator Week, which is June 19th to the 23rd. And that was actually first designated by the Senate to bring attention to the decline of pollinator populations and the importance of their role in the ecosystem. They specifically picked June because that's a time when pollinator activity is really at its peak. And part of that reason is they're actively foraging for nectar and pollen during this period. And June is also a time when many plants are really in full bloom. So they're able to provide a lot of those resources for the pollinators at that time. So that's why June was picked at that time. And it's also a great time, particularly in Connecticut, to continue planting your plants, because you're still a little bit cooler than some of the southern states.
Well, maybe my dear old dad was a spectacular manager of time, or just like to really conserve his landscaping activities to a very narrow point in time. Because I just remember growing up and into my teens years, my father saying, Memorial Day weekend is the weekend that you do all your planting. And if you ever got any idea about planting anything 2 or 3 weeks after Memorial Day, be a little too late. And if you got any idea about getting anything in the ground before Memorial Day, be like, a little too early. When we talk about putting a greater number of native plants to benefit both our native environment, yards, properties, and create more opportunities and sites to attract pollinators, hummingbirds, bees, butterflies. At what point is it sort of getting to be too late to put those plants in the ground?
Well, that's a really good question. So the Memorial Day, my family was like that too, and I'm from Ohio originally, but that was a lot of...
Maybe some smart dad in Arizona was thinking it too.
Maybe. I don't know about that. It really also revolves around a lot of vegetable planting, because you want to get your vegetables in then so that you will have a great harvest.
I see.
Especially tomatoes. So I think that was part of the thought logic there. But the great thing about native plants is that, you can plant them throughout June, and even really as long as you've got some temps and some temperatures that aren't too crazy hot. And, particularly we offer, National Wildlife Federation launched gardenforwildlife.com that actually sells 2x2x3 size kind of starter plants. You can plant those. You need to, obviously they're small, so you'll need to water them, especially if it's hot initially. But they actually, June is still a good time to have them get established. And they, particularly the asters, the goldenrod, the ones I was mentioning that actually tend to flower in the fall, June's a great time to put a lot of those in the ground to start to see some fall bloom of those particular plants. So you just got to keep an eye out, and water. Obviously, if you just never know. Right now, I live in Maryland right now, and we've had unseasonably cool temps. So it's been great for planting, but we're going to hit 90 this weekend. So a little nervous about that. But if you go beyond, 80 into the 90s consistently for weeks, that's going to be challenging to keep the plants fresh. But if you've got still cool temps at night, you can still plant.
Very good. Well, before we let you go, Mary, let's talk a little bit about sustainable landscaping, because that's another important component of development and maintenance of the right kind of balance in our yards and on our properties. You've already talked a little bit about the Keystone plants and how they support virtually all butterflies, moths, and a good portion of native bees here in Connecticut. And folks can get more information at gardenforwildlife.com, as Mary mentioned. Mm-hmm. So, but let's talk a little bit more. You mentioned watering and the most important times and amounts to do, but here in Connecticut, we've already started hearing from our water companies that they want people to be cutting back on water use. Talk to us a little bit about water conservation.
Sure, thanks so much. So water conservation is really essential, and one of the great things about native plants is once they're established, they have these amazing root systems that actually spread out, under the soil, and as they kind of grow, then die back, and then shoot out new shoots, they're creating all these channels in the soil, which really allows for greater water absorption and helps with stormwater runoff, and many of them they are adapted to the local climate. So often native plants, just planting them, are an aid to your water conservation because you don't need to keep them as fully, constantly watered like you would an ornamental from another area or another country. So that's one great thing about how native plants support water conservation. And then other things you can do is where you feel like you do need some extra help is like doing drip irrigation or using the water from rain barrels to collect water for your vegetable garden, for your flowering beds, and so forth. The other thing is really keeping those group those plants with similar water needs together. That helps kind of concentration, keep that moisture, and also use dye-free mulches around plants until they spread out to retain moisture as well. Those are really critical things. And like I said, the native plants really, really help. And not having any of your plants treated with any chemicals or your soil treated is also going to be super helpful and beneficial to the wildlife that is visiting those plants.
So am I hearing right that the addition of dye in mulch will actually reduce its capacity to absorb and retain water and continue to, moisten the plants and soil under it?
The correlation is more that we recommend dye-free because we don't know what's in the dye.
And
we don't know if that's environmentally really great for a lot of, under your soil and under the mulch, there's a lot of organisms that are so essential to soil health. And that's an area that's being studied, but we just generally recommend kind of a organic, clean mulch that hasn't had any kind of treatment of anything, just to keep up with the sustainable practices.
Very good. If folks are more interested in learning more or hearing more, you can go to gardenforwildlife.com. Mary, any other important websites to tell people about right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that's really exciting is we are celebrating our 50th year of actually honoring people who do these conservation and sustainable habitat practices mm-hmm. in their gardens. It's the Certified Wildlife Habitat Program, and we're hopefully going to reach close here in the end of the summer 300,000 certified wildlife habitats.
Cool.
And anyone can certify their property, their garden, their collection of native plants on their patio that has a water source.
Okay.
So providing some kind of water source and providing the native plants, you will be hitting the food, water, cover, and places to raise young, as well as the sustainable practices requirements of the certification.
Great.
So NWF.org, so National Wildlife Federation, so NWF.org/certify. You can go and get specific information to recognize your property for doing all these great things, and you can get your plants at gardenforwildlife.com.
Great, we'll leave it there. Mary Phillips is head of Garden for Wildlife and Certified Wildlife Habitat Programs at the National Wildlife Federation. Mary, happy planting season, and we hope you enjoy all the fruits of that hard work on your own property. Thank you for helping us improve ours up here in Connecticut.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program for the people. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.